2019 at Skipper's Smokehouse. The doors open at 3 p.m. For more information, go online to WMNF.org or call us here at 813-238-8001.
Still collecting records and CDs? Well, it's almost here, folks, and it only happens once a year. WMNF's big record and CD sale. Throughout the year, the station receives records and CDs donated from our kind listeners. And then for five glorious hours, a huge sale goes down. WMNF's big record and CD sale. It all happens on Saturday, April 27th from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the WMNF building located at 1210 East Martin Luther King Boulevard.
All right. Welcome back. WMNF 88.5 is just jamming a whole lot there.
Got my life together this morning.
That's right. Angelica Vila jamming. All right. And we got some Facebook comments. DeAndre Long, we're not necessarily so far removed from slavery. Not even. There are people alive who know people who know slaves.
Right.
I mean, you know, Brina Eden's good to see you as well. Kevin Oliver, that's right. He's like, go in. That's right. I'm going in, man. You know, come on, man. You know, this is just ridiculous. This is just ridiculous. So, yeah, Kevin, good to see you, Kevin Oliver. He's like, you know, you said my government. Yeah, man, it's on the Facebook, man. So good to see you there. So, yes, you are listening to WMNF Tampa, Sarasota, Valrico. Where else we got?
Lakeland.
St. Pete. You know,
we just out here.
Signal all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
Out here for real. So, very interesting how many black people want to traumatize us black kids. So we got a couple of callers on before we get to last couple of stories. So let's see who's been on the longest. Okay, let's see what we got here. All right, you are on the Sunday Forum in Kyrite in the 4th Estate. Caller, please tell your name and where you're calling from.
All right. We're
going
to go to the next caller. Caller, try to give us a call back. 813-239-9663.
Yes. All right. We have... Okay, next caller. Please give us your name and where you're calling from.
Yeah, my name...
What's that, sir? Did you go on mute,
sir? You went mute.
You're still live here, but we can't see you. Can't hear you, sir.
Hello?
Yeah, okay. There we go. You put the phone on mute, or what happened?
My name's DeAndre. I'm calling from Riverview. I left a note on the Facebook Live comment section.
Is this my King Hot Buddy?
Yeah, it is.
All right, what's going on? All right, shout out. Big Blue.
I just took some difference from the statement was said to the young man who had called a little bit ago. Before the break, I do believe there's a necessity for black people to come together over a lot of these matters of racism so that we get, you know, some reaction that we appreciate, you know, over the matter of our current circumstances in our history. Mm-hmm. Because if we don't, I mean, let me just put it like this. Malcolm X, one of the scariest brothers to the white establishment in history. Same with Martin Luther King. You know, unfortunately, these brothers are dead, but still, it goes to say a lot about the unity and the common mind, like us being on the same wavelength.
Absolutely.
Or program. If we are not, then we're going to have problems. We're going to continue to have problems. And some of those problems, we can go ahead and deal with ourselves. We're able to do that to get, you know, to seam up all this fracturing between different doctrines, between... You know, people with different sexualities, the old versus the young when it comes to, you know, black baby boomers or black Generation X versus black, you know, millennials. Yeah, we've seen that come to some consensus on matters and visions forward. Then we can, you know, go ahead and make things turn around and possibly have those that, you know, we're looking to address, you know, more than, you know, ready to go ahead and open up their pockets to deal with stuff. I'm talking about the DOS and ADOS. You know what I'm saying? Because that's beyond, like, good timing right now. That need to have happened many administrations ago.
Yeah,
you know,
I agree.
I just want to throw that out there.
All right. Well, I appreciate your comment. Thank you very much.
All right, no problem.
All right, take care. And appreciate your comment on Facebook. Yes, you guys on Facebook, continue to, you know, make comments. You know, we try to read them if you, you know, got something good to say. So we appreciate you. Give us a call at WMNF 88.5-813-239-9663. You are listening to the Sunday Forum with Kaya Wright in the Fourth Estate. And our topic today is going to be Not Falling for the Okie Doke Part 2. I'm going to go through that very quickly because I want to get to the main theme, which is affirmative action for me, but not for thee. Okay, affirmative action for me, but not for thee. So a couple of other really quick items. You know what? Actually, I'm not going to do that again, right? Like I always do that, right? I'll say it's a quick item. The next thing you know, it's like 12:45 and I got 15 minutes to go. So I do have to introduce the college scandal. So I am going to do that. And actually, this will be quick. So Germany has agreed to speed up the return of artifacts they stole. Okay, we've spoken about that before, and there have been some countries. France has given back some things, and other countries are still on this. You know, we're gonna lend it to you, okay? And caller, I see you there. I'm gonna get to you. We're gonna lend it to you, and we're not going to give you back your property, which is absurd. But a recent article came out this week that the German culture and foreign ministries, as well as regional and local cultural authorities, signed a pledge late Wednesday committing museums and scientific institutions to completing an inventory of their natural history, art, and cultural history holdings from the colonial era and bring them back. But here's the interesting thing. I didn't know, you know, you hear about France and England for colonies, Spain, of course, but not so much Germany. Not only did Germany colonize what is now Namibia, Germany held colonies from Togoland, now Togo, and what was then Cameroon in the west, across the far slopes to Mount Kilimanjaro, and what is now Tanzania in the east, as well as Pacific Islands. So, you know, they were in on the sociopathic, you know, nonsense as well, aside from, obviously, the Holocaust. But so anyway, that was just been interesting news from this week. And Venezuela, the hands-off Venezuela marches all over the world were great to see. So wanted to just give an update. I've been trying to talk a little bit about Venezuela every week, you know, kind of, you know, really keep an eye on what's going on with America and its gangsterism. But our main focus today is going to be on the college admission scandal. So I'm going to go ahead and introduce that, okay? And then we're going to go to, actually, since we're going to do the Falling for the Okie Doke first, let me do that, and then I'll do the introduction, because that's all the current events other than college admission, and then the reparations comment from AOC, which is, again, ridiculous, and Kate Morgan. So I'll do those next week. But let's go to finishing up Not Falling for the Okie Doke, okay? So I read you all a quote that went over really well with a lot of folks with regards to the fact that Black Americans are the most frequent victims of hate crimes in every single tally. And I wanted to do Not Falling for the Okie Doke because we've heard a lot about Jussie Smollett. You know, he had a 16-count indictment last week. And the narrative that has been spun trying to, you know, minimize racism and its prevalence, right? And, you know, somebody was talking about, yeah, well, what about these, you know, racial hoaxes? And for every racial hoax that there is, okay, I can come up with, you know, tens of thousands, I know I say 100,000, but whatever, you know, tens of thousands of examples of actual attacks, etc., on Black people. And it's important that those things be recognized, right? And not be kind of, you know, kind of just pushed to the side. So, you know, a couple of clips on a couple of things. Remember James Harris Jackson, the guy, the Baltimore resident who went to New York with a sword, 36-inch sword, looking for a random Black man to kill. Okay, but not any Black man, mm-hmm. because, you know, like I said when I first talked about this, how many Black men in Baltimore?
It's a lot more than where he went.
I mean, we're talking about one of the blackest cities in the United mm-hmm. States of America. Mm-hmm. And not only do you leave there because you're a punk, okay, and you go to New York and you don't find you a strapping young man.
Oh, No.
You find you a 66-year-old old man, take your sword out, and do what you did.
Right.
Okay? Random. Just like, you know, as Jussie alleges, again, you know, like I said, unless you can tell me the Nigerian brothers, you know, have some motive to lie, then I have to believe what they're saying. I mean, or at least, you know, be skeptical about what Jussie is saying. Okay? So I think 16 counts is, you know, ridiculous for an indictment, but, you know, something is wrong. But okay, let's just say for the sake of argument, he made that up. All right? Here is a man, James Jackson, who randomly went and killed somebody.
City,
let's hear a little
veteran,
bit about that.
Who police say is an admitted white supremacist, has been charged with murder as a hate crime in the stabbing death of a black man he apparently chose at random. Prosecutors now say he told police that attack was only the beginning. ABC's Gio Benitez with the latest.
Tonight, disturbing new allegations about the 28-year-old Army vet police say was caught on video moments after stabbing and killing 66-year-old Timothy Kaufman on Monday night. James Jackson facing a judge today, looking angry as prosecutors called the murder a hate crime, most likely an act of terrorism, adding that Jackson considered this murder practice before going to Times Square to kill additional black men.
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, black people minding their business. We have to look out for Liam Neeson. Okay? We got to look out for this fool. You know, we got to look out all over the place. Okay? I only went like the past like 10 years or something. I didn't have time to go over all the attacks. Physical and otherwise. We're going to go over physical attacks and the, you know, because he said he put a noose on around his neck, and go over some of that too. Another incident, Randy Joe Metcalf, convicted of kicking and stomping the head of Lamar Sandridge in Iowa, an attack where he hurled the N-word of him. Dude is not doing anything to him. Random attack. Kicked him so much, the dude lost consciousness. Okay? Lost consciousness. Randy Joe Metcalf. We have James Craig Anderson, beaten by a rope, and he was gay, actually, mm-hmm. as well. So, gay, black, like Jussie, okay? Beaten by a roving pack of white people, three men and a woman, okay? So, let's make sure we understand it's not about only white men engaging in acts of racism, terror, who were looking to F up some N-words, okay? So, let's hear a little clip about that particular case if you hadn't heard of it.
Of their role in a deadly hate crime were sentenced today.
16 WABC's Ross Adams live now at the federal courthouse with the case that shocked the country, Ross.
As you could imagine, it was quite an emotional day in the courtroom for James Anderson's family, who said he was killed by a group of vile, evil racists whose eyes were filled with hatred. Surveillance video captured the pickup truck running down James Anderson outside a West Jackson motel in June 2011. Prosecutors say a group of white teens targeted Anderson because he was black. Authorities say ringleader Daryl Detman was behind the wheel of that pickup. Detman, already serving life on state murder charges, will serve 50 years on the federal charges. The judge gave Rice 18 and a half years and Dylan Butler 7 years in federal prison. He called Anderson's killing a modern-day lynching.
All right, and we're going to go ahead and get to this call who's been waiting so patiently. Hey, you are on the Sunday Forum of Kyle Wright and the Fourth Estate on WMNF 88.5 WMNF Tampa. Please go ahead with your question or comment.
My name is Michael, and I'm calling from Tampa. I just would like to say that if that teacher was wrong, then Alex Haley was wrong for writing the book Roots about his ancestral heritage. And also, he was wrong about writing Queen and being put to film. That's all I wanted to say.
All right, we got a false equivalence alert. I need a button for that. You know, absolutely not the same thing.
And he did a mic drop on us. You heard that boop?
except it was a faux drop. You know, give me a break. All right. And we got another caller to see you. Give us a call at 813-239-9663. 813-239-9663. You're listening to WMNF 88.5 Kyle Wright and Fourth Estate on the Sunday Forum. Where our topic today is not falling for the okie doke, part two, and affirmative action for me and not for thee. We have Dylan Roof. I don't have to play anything about that, but we know about, obviously, him going into the Emmanuel Church and AME in Charleston and murdering 9 black people. I heard someone talking about this. I forgot what I was listening to, but, you know, talking about how he went in there, you know, worshiped with them and then killed them. Another random act of racist violence against black people by some random white person. Okay, you know, so Jussie's, you know, situation is not some, oh my God, you know, we have to rethink all of these incidents that occur because, well, you know, again, I could be here all day, but let's just go through a couple of more. And I even, again, limited my search. Joe Hunt, okay, chases and stabs Stephen Woodson, tries to murder him, the dude is running for his life across a parking lot. Of course, he's thinking that he's going to die. You know, obviously, and the particular man who was chasing him, get this, and something that I didn't let go in the clip about James Jackson because, you know, we had short on time, but one thing that also upset Jackson as to why he was looking for black men to kill was he was upset about interracial relationships, okay? Right. And then this guy, Joe Hunt, he was also in a rage because he thought his wife was cheating, not just that she was cheating, but that she was cheating on a black man. So that's, you know, so he finds this random black man whom he doesn't know, Steve Woodson, chases him, tries to kill him, you know, and for what? I mean, I just can't even imagine. You know, you're talking, some guy comes to you, starts, you know, talking trash, and you don't know this person, and they want to kill you. Like Liam Neeson. You know, you don't even know what's going on here. You know, but they want to kill you. Another incident, Kayla Norton and Jose Torres, they aimed a shotgun. There was a 9-year-old having a birthday party. You may have seen this. There was a parade they were having with a bunch of Confederates. It was some kind of Confederate day, okay? And they threatened the black attendees, including the 9-year-old. You got kids. It's a 9-year-old party. Mm-hmm. Again, back to terrorizing our kids. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe somebody thinks that should be a demonstration as well, apparently. So, including hurling slurs and pointing shotgun at the children. Well, this is what it's like to be black, to be pointing a shotgun at you. You know? I mean, completely ridiculous. I actually had a clip for that, but I'm not even going to play it. Gregory Bush, if you remember the Kroger shooting from a couple of months ago? This was like late last year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Remember he
two
stopped
or three
at,
people?
Yeah, and he stopped mm-hmm. at 2 churches. Mm-hmm. Beforehand, 2 black churches. Mm-hmm. He didn't go to white churches. Mm-hmm. He went to 2 black churches and shoot them up first, but you know they wouldn't let him in or something, and then he ended up going to the Kroger mm-hmm. and shooting some folks. And when a white guy confronted him in a parking lot, like, hey, I think that's the shooter, and I guess the guy had a gun,
right?
And he was like, you know, white. He told the white man in the parking lot that whites don't shoot each other.
Yeah.
Okay, whites don't shoot each other. So those are just a couple examples of random beatings, murder, and assaults of black people by random white people by virtue of their being black. And we got a call who's been on for a little while, so let me just go ahead and get this call. Give us a call at 813-239-9663, 813-239-9663. You listen to WMNF 88.5 with Kaya Wright in the fourth estate. What are your thoughts generally before I go to the next set of incidents?
Yeah, I just wanted to add also to your different names as far as Nia Wilson.
Mm.
Nia Wilson, and I was in Oakland, California recently, okay. And I was all about there and, you know, exploring the city, and I took the BART. And this is the transportation system which this young sister rode on one day and found herself stabbed.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I remember that.
Racially motivated. So it's just examples after examples after examples of these hate crimes.
You know, we could be here all day. Since they, again, like I said last week, since they started gathering statistics in the 90s. That's actually a word I have a problem saying, so I did pretty good that time. And began collecting data in the 90s. FBI notes that black Americans have been the most frequent victims of hate crimes mm-hmm. in every single tally. Every single tally. So, and we're going to go on to nooses. Because remember, again, they put a, you know, he alleged they put a noose around his neck, which, okay, may not have happened. I saw a funny video where they were, had 2 brothers, like, you know, practicing the, because, you know, people on the internet crazy.
Yeah.
And social media crazy. So practicing the whole deal. But you know, let's talk about some noose issues. But first, let's go to this caller we have. You're listening to WMNF 88.5 with Kaya Wright in the Fourth Estate. And please let us know your name and where you're calling from. And thank you for calling.
Well, my name is Terry. You call me Superpower Pill sometimes.
Oh, okay. What's going on there, Terry?
Power Pill does put money in on the bank when the ting-ting counts.
All right, we appreciate you.
So we're talking about, you know, don't fall for the okey-doke, and, you know, that falls right in line with the current vote we got coming up for mayor. You got the police lady, and you got the philanthropist. Now, why would we fall for the okey-doke if we've been under the strict disciplinarian and she hasn't alleviated any of the pressures that we're on from the administration, from the inside? Why would we think that she would magically get on the outside and change things? Therefore, let's give Mr. Spraz the opportunity to put some of that philanthropic up.
Terry, come on, man. Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously, you know, everyone needs to, and we're actually, hopefully we'll have a forum where, you know, I can ask some questions of these candidates, right? And, like, figure out, like, you know, hey, where do they stand on things so people can make informed decisions, you know, because there's, you know, some issues that we know about, you know, with these candidates. So, but people shouldn't fall for the okey-doke, period. I agree with that piece. Terry, you still there?
He might have dropped off.
Yeah, I think he dropped off. Mm-hmm. I don't know. We're having some issues there. All right, Terry, thanks for calling. But yes, for sure, definitely. But in a sense, I'm not endorsing any, you know, candidate or anything mm-hmm. like that because, you know, we're not here to do that. But, you know, people, you know, have a right to their opinions when it comes to who they think would be best for the city. So that runoff, again, like I said, on last week is April the 23rd for city council seats 1, 3, and 5, as well as the mayoral race. So a lot to go out and vote for. All right. You are listening again to WMNF 88.5 with Kaya Wright and the Fourth Estate on the Sunday Forum. Give us a call at 813-239-9663, 813-239-9663. Always looking for new callers to talk about some of these issues that we're discussing. So, again, the noose bit, right? If I don't know if you remember back in, I want to say, again, late last year in Miami, they had a case of firefighters, okay? You know, putting nooses or somehow making some joke. I think they either drew a noose or something on their black colleagues. Mm. So let's listen to a report about, we want to talk about, you know, nooses and, oh my goodness, you know, slavery was so far, you know, so long ago and, you know, things not happening. Oh, yes.
Now at 11, a half dozen City of Miami firefighters fired for taking part in a racist and lewd prank at their fire station. Two of them are sons of retired firefighters. The details now from Miami and CBS4's Aurelio Ortega.
Miami Fire Rescue 12 at the center of an internal investigation that resulted in 6 firefighters being fired for an incident the city says involved sexually explicit and racially offensive conduct. The city manager says he and the Miami Fire Rescue Chief were made aware of the incident on September 9th at the fire station located off Northwest 46th Street and 14th Avenue. According to the Miami Herald, the incident involved someone hanging a noose over a black co-worker's family photos and drawing lewd images on pictures of his wife, mother, and kids. According to City Manager Daniel Alfonso, Miami PD began an investigation which led to 11 firefighters being relieved of duty with pay. Of the 11, 6 were handed termination letters today, which CBS 4 News obtained. The letters were handed out to the following firefighters: William Bryson, Alejandro Cesi, Kevin Mesoso, Justin Rumbaugh, David Rivera, and Harold Santana.
Yeah, so, you know, and given the symbology, and this actually happens quite a bit, mm-hmm. actually, with people yeah. using nooses and you know, Halloween, they want to hang something black or, you know, whatever. Understanding the painful history of lynching, you know, to black people and constantly, deliberately invoking these images, invoking this pain. I've said it many times. Think about how frequent it is. You know, I didn't talk about this in the current events, but Russell Westbrook, who I love, as you all know, I love Russell Westbrook because he's always 100 miles an hour. I love it. But he got into it with the fan. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the fan was using a bunch of racial slurs. Now, I always talk about how, you know, of all the I got it, you're mad at a player or whatever. You could call him thousands of names. But when it comes to black people, something racist is always right below the surface. Okay? something about the N-word or monkeys or whatever. You know, that's always right below the surface. Again, thousands of things they can say. But this is the one that they go to because this tells you who we're dealing with. So, you know, so these knuckleheads with this nonsense. And you remember just what last month, Burberry, right? With yeah. with the noose, the
with the blackface.
No, that's Gucci.
That's Burberry. Where?
Yes, yeah, Burberry. They had the fashion show and there was a dress and it had a noose.
Oh, okay. I did see that.
Yeah. So, you know, and again, then they come with this fake apology, this ridiculous nonsense of really, and I've said it before, it's manufactured outrage, right? Then they get the clicks and, you know, and everybody is focused on what it is that they're doing. And they can just keep on with it. Oh, we're sorry. You know, I don't want your apology, you know? I just want to talk about what you've done. And you don't mean it. So don't say it. Mm-mm. I was talking about this. Just don't, if you don't mean it, don't say it. You know, I talked about that example of when I was in high school and they wanted me to apologize because I upset the assistant coach, the basketball coach, and I was a starting point guard. And they weren't going to let us playoffs and they weren't going to let me play. I'm like, what? And they're like, oh, until you say sorry. And I was like, oh, well, I'm not going to mean it. You know, I told them straight up, I'm not going to mean it. You know, you could, you know, come on now. So that was nonsense, and of course the firefighters. Then in Louisiana, at West Ouachita, I'm probably saying that wrong, Ouachita High School, put a noose around the neck of a black student because he, quote, wanted to see how many black boys' necks he could put it around and get photos. More with the traumatizing of kids. And this is a white kid, right? And dispels that myth about, oh, well, we need to wait for the boomers to die. I've said this many times. Mm-hmm. You know, no. These young white high schoolers and all that engaging in the same nonsense.
Dispels the myth about ignorance as well. I mean, you can't put everything on them being ignorant. They know.
They know. Hey, but think about, why is it so, why are we so desperate to be like, well, maybe they just don't understand.
Didn't know.
You know, it's trauma bonding. It's like an abuse victim with an abuser. Well, you know, he only does that when he's drunk. Mm-hmm. You just don't know him. You just jealous because you ain't got a man. Okay, I don't like men. Okay, but would you just jealous because you... You know what I'm saying? I'm trying to tell you, this dude is beating you or whatever. This person is not good for you. Oh, well, you know, this is how we are. Mm-hmm. This is how we are with these people. This is nonsense. Also this year, Eastern Michigan University, they put a noose around a black doll. Okay? And when called on it, they're like, oh, it's a prank. Oh, it's a prank. It's a prank. Who is this supposed to be funny to? You know? I mean, this is not funny to us. It's harmful. It's hurtful. But you constantly have these kinds of things. 2017, at the U.S. Mint, employee placed a noose on the desk of a black coworker. Caught it on a security camera. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you remember that one. You know, so again, and then we talked about the firefighters already. So, you know, several instances, okay, of black people being mistreated and maligned. We're going to go to break here in a second. Being mistreated and maligned involving nooses similar to what Jussie alleged happened. Okay, if it didn't happen, there are plenty other examples. There are plenty other examples. And one thing that got me about the whole Jussie situation was, I don't know if you saw the press conference, but the police chief who came out.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So this police chief, this brother, you know, they'll put them, you know,
of course,
those a lot of police, you know, black police chiefs, I mean, not effectuating any change, right? So, you know, but there. And you know, it's not as if that you need the kind of people who are going to effectuate change, like in the Laquan McDonald case where you have a black, I want to say it was a black attorney general who was then challenged the sentence being too light, right? Mm-hmm. So that's having a black person in a position of authority who is about addressing our issues and not about hand-wringing, right? And not making white people angry, because that's usually what the focus is.
Yeah, and in other words, somebody that's about that life.
Right, mm-hmm. Right. So, So, you know, the Chicago PD does this press conference, talks this nonsense about, oh, you know, now this is going to make it harder for other, you know, hate crimes. Well, why? You know, like I said last week, when people falsely accuse black people of crimes, and I don't even have time to go through all that, falsely accuse black people of crime, it's not as if now they say, oh, well, we should just believe that black men are not criminal, because that was incorrect. You know, if that's the logic, then that's what should follow. But that's not what happened. There's a continual belief that black men are innately criminal or violent, etc., despite all the false accusations against them that have been proven. So, no, we're not going to do that. But, you know, we're going to talk a little bit about the Chicago PD when we come back from this break. So, on this particular break, we are going to hear another great neo-soul cut. So, I'm a big fan of Robert Glasper, and he is a great musician. He does a lot of features a lot of times, and this is one he did with Erica. This is a little bit old. Yeah, but he did a nice little remix of her Afro Blue. And so here is Robert Glasper, Afro Blue, featuring neo-soul queen herself, Erica Badu. So check this out. This is a nice groove one for you.
Silhouettes, your body next to mine, dancing real close. Step left, step right, then a pirouette. It would appear as that we really do believe in us, but it's so hard to believe all we need is us. Believe a kiss on a cold day could be enough. Look at the stars and wonder what it is they see in us. Where is this leading us? That's all I'm asking. Love comes in every color, but the fact is I never needed 50 shades of gray. Just turn the lights down low and give me every shade of blackness.
Hi, this is Angela B. We're back again. The March 23rd Caribbean Cruise Music Festival takes place at Skipper Smokehouse, Saturday, March the 23rd. Live bands include Impulse, Renegade, Jafarai, Trinity 7, Sucker Boys, Spy vs. Spy, Terry Edwards and the Latin Jazz Band, Tassa Drums, African Dancers, Bickley Rivera and Nelson with Island Chill.
Everybody wondering what
Ghana, Renegade, Gia, Wayne Stutter, Soka Van, The Man, DJ Spice will be our DJ. See you there, 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 on the 23rd of March, 2019, at Skipper's Smokehouse. The doors open at 3 p.m. For more information, go online to WMNF.org or call us here at 813-238-8001.
Do you have closets or shelves filled with record albums that you've not listened to for years?
Just take those old records off the shelf!
We can find new homes for your old LPs. Donate them to WMNF for our annual record and CD sale coming in April. Bring your albums to the station. And for big collections in good condition, we will come for pickup. Call 813-238-8001 for more information.
All right, all right. Welcome back to WMNF 88.5 with Kaya Wright and the Fourth Estate. You are listening to the Sunday Forum. And our topic today is completion of not falling for the okey-doke. And then we're going to get to affirmative action for me and not for thee. And we're going to talk about the college admission scandal. But more specifically, we're going to get into a bunch of different statutes that provided affirmative action for whites. Okay, so in Facebook Live again, great to see you guys. See, we got another comment for DeAndre. Bigots in power need to be sought out vigorously and removed from power. Indeed, indeed, I absolutely agree with that. So, you know, I talked about Chicago PD with like all their unsolved mystery. They got record time, all right, to focus on Jussie, right? And you know, doing this that ridiculous press conference. And if you remember, I mean, the Chicago PD is a cesspool of racism, white supremacy, okay? A complete, I mean, there was a Chicago task force report that showed systemic, entrenched, rampant racism by the Chicago Police Department, all disproportionately targeting black people. There was a 2017 Department of Justice report also confirmed rampant civil rights violations and racial discrimination by the Chicago Police Department. And here's a clip talking about probably the most infamous, I don't even know if there's another city in the country that had this torture site that the Chicago police had. So let's play a clip really quickly about that.
Chicago's city council voted today to pay $5.5 million to victims of police torture that date back from the 1970s into the 90s. The city has already spent more than $100 million after losing some lawsuits and settling others. Dean Reynolds has more.
John Burge is an old man now, but he was once one of the most feared cops in Chicago, the master of a detective unit that allegedly tortured criminal suspects for decades. Operating out of the notorious Area 2 headquarters, Burge and his men were accused of choking, shocking, burning, and beating people, most of them African Americans, until they confessed. Stanley Rice was recently exonerated after serving 31 years in prison.
They beat me out throughout my body. They handcuffed me to some bars, kicked my legs apart, and they beat me in my testicles twice.
The unanimous city council vote approving the $5.5 million in reparations means as many as 80 torture victims could get $100,000 apiece from the city. That's in addition to the more than $100 million already spent in separate legal settlements.
All right, all right. I mean, just absolutely ridiculous when it comes to them and their torture, okay? And it having the nerve to speak about, like, this is some, you know, big, you know, horrible, you know, the worst tragedy. And I mean, you got Laquan McDonald, Chicago, okay? And, you know, but they're like sharks in the water because, ooh, you know, there was this Jussie Smollett situation. How many, in that Laquan McDonald case, you had police making false reports, okay? You know, even though, whatever, they were acquitted or whatever, but, you know, it's like, you know, police. And I think that was even on a technicality. So, you know, you can miss me with the hypocrisy of your outrage, you know, at the fact that you know, this, you know, may have happened. And I, again, I was going to go through the whole, you know, all of the fake. I mean, we know there's several. I've spoken many times about it in Miami, them picking out random black men to charge with crimes. You remember that? Mm-hmm. That police chief?
Yes.
I reported on or talked about that. There was another woman who claimed that some, you know, black men, you know, assaulted her. Complete lie. There was a, I talked about a guy who said that he actually had shot himself in the leg, but claimed the black man did it. And I talked about the fact that of all the men on planet Earth that you could accuse, okay, hundreds of different, you know, ethnicities or whatever, constantly choose black men. Mm-hmm. You know, these people know what they're doing. Back to this, well, they don't know. You know, why didn't they just say some, you know, Asian guy did it? How come they didn't say that? You know, I wonder why. We all know why. You know, we all know why. So let's get to the second part and the main theme for this show, which is affirmative action for me and not for thee. So let's go into this college admission scandal. I mean, this thing is completely ridiculous. Let me introduce it with a clip about the scandal, and then we're going to go over some additional facts that aren't in here, and then get into some laws, policies, etc., that were affirmative action for white people throughout the centuries in this country. Okay? So first, let's hear this clip.
Celebrities and business leaders are among 50 people who face criminal charges in a giant college admission scam. More arrests could come in the weeks and months ahead. Actress Lori Loughlin and Felicity Huffman are two of the dozens of wealthy parents accused in the alleged scheme that lasted nearly one decade.
Prosecutors say some of them paid millions to get their children into elite schools like Yale, Stanford, and the University of Southern California. The universities say they are victims. Carter Evans is at USC with the story of what prosecutors call the biggest fraud case of its kind in the U.S. Carter, good morning.
Good morning. More than a dozen of the defendants allegedly bought their way here into USC. All told, the 33 people named in the indictment paid an alleged $25 million in bribes. And it wasn't just Hollywood elite. The operation dubbed Varsity Blues also led to charges against wealthy lawyers and CEOs.
William Singer left a Boston federal court yesterday after pleading guilty to running the biggest college admission scam federal prosecutors have ever seen. They say he became a cooperating witness, turning in A-list clients.
Their actions were, without a doubt, insidious, selfish, and shameful.
According to court documents, Singer was the CEO of a college prep company in California. Parents spent as much as $6.5 million to guarantee their children's college admission. The company would not only help doctor SAT and ACT tests, it would also create the false impression the students were elite athletes, bribing coaches and creating fake athletic credentials, complete with altered photos for kids, some of whom didn't even play the sports for which they were recruited.
For every student admitted through fraud, an honest, genuinely talented student was rejected.
As a student who got in for merit, hearing about that, it is absolutely upsetting.
You are not going to believe what has happened.
Desperate Housewives star Felicity Huffman allegedly paid $15,000 to boost her daughter's SAT score. Her husband, actor William H. Macy, was in court with her as she was charged with conspiracy and posted a $250,000 bond.
Well, that's all the time we have today.
Lori Loughlin of Full House fame is also facing conspiracy charges and is expected to surrender to authorities today. She and her husband, designer Massimo Giannulli, allegedly paid $500,000 to have their two daughters labeled as recruits to the USC crew team, even though neither participated in the sport.
I'm going to do a dorm room tour today.
Their 19-year-old daughter, Olivia Jade, is a social media influencer.
We have a nice carpet from Amazon.
Who apparently capitalized on her experience at USC with sponsored posts. She had to apologize last year after saying this on her YouTube channel.
I do want the experience of, like, game days, partying. I don't really care about school, as you guys all know.
This is not just... to me, is not just an admissions scandal. It's more broadly an indictment of our entire educational system.
And many colleges are already taking action. Two athletics officials here at USC that were allegedly involved were fired yesterday. Prosecutors say many of the students had no idea what their parents had allegedly done in this case.
Okay, I don't believe that. Because at some point, okay, if you can't, you know, one of them was a water polo. Okay, if you can't play water polo or rowing, if you can't row, then you, what, you mean when your parents drop you off, what they just gonna, and you show up to the rowing practice? Like, how would you even know to go there? So they knew.
You're complicit. Right.
Mm-hmm. They knew. I mean, yeah, their parents were doing it, but I mean, that's just a lie. Okay? And I mean, the whole thing is just, it's completely ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just a couple of other facts. So the range of prices, generally speaking, even if they only paid $15,000 for this or that, $100,000 to $6.5 million per student. Per student for a ringer, okay, for Rick Ringer, who also was trying to get on a reality show, all right, where that talked about like how hard it was to get into schools or whatever, and he has a video where he's talking really about doing the exact same thing. He's like, well, $10 million isn't enough for certain, you know, for certain schools. Yeah.
Was that his marketing ad?
Well,
low-key?
I guess so. He didn't make it. You know, they have to do audition tapes or whatever for the reality
okay.
show. Yeah, so right. I think TMZ found it.
Jeez.
TMZ got like the best freaking investigators. So, you know, so this dude has $100,000 to $6.5 million per student, okay? And then here in Tampa, you have Mark Riddell. Yes, excuse me, not Tampa, Bradenton. He's at IMG Academy. He was the one taking the test. Yes, tying it right in the local.
Wow.
He was the one taking tests at IMG Academy. IMG Academy in Bradenton. And what he would have to do, because let's say it wouldn't be realistic for you to get a perfect score. You know, you needed a good score, but you know, he was good enough. I read an article about it. He was good enough where he could finesse it, mm-hmm. where he would miss the right,
right.
amount.
You got to know the right answers in order to get them wrong.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so, you know, he would, you know, get you in the range,
mm-hmm.
you know. And so, I mean, just completely mm-hmm. crazy. Lawsuits, all kind of lawsuits filed by folks who didn't get in, which I don't think that's going to go anywhere. But anyway, a lot of schools involved, USC, Stanford, Georgetown, Yale, Wake Forest, UCLA, University of Texas, University of San Diego, etc. So, you know, all kinds of foolishness. And, you know, of course, so you saw the hot takes, you know, about how, you know, black people are always, you know, considered suspicious when it comes to, mm-hmm. you know, being in a good school or whatever. And we've always known about these legacy admissions. Right?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And these other ways that people get into school. And when the part two of this particular show, I'm coordinating with USF to get one of their great professors on, you know, who's an subject matter expert, and just talk about, you know, these issues with affirmative action. But one thing that we know for sure is that, you know, your credentials are questioned, those students' credentials are questioned when they're in those schools and they're black. But here you have these wealthy kids who are getting their way paid. And, you know, there's so many people who you meet, and we've already known about the, you know, the privilege. Again, the legacy admissions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have a huge donation to the school.
Right.
You know, this wing on the university hospital or whatever. You know, which isn't right. What does that have? Even legacy admissions. Mm-hmm. So what? What does that have to do with you? I mean, we end up with somebody like Bush. You know, I mean, you're like, this dude went to Yale, like, you know, and it's not about, you know, really the intellect, but the connection, et cetera. Now, for some people, isn't there plenty of people in you know, not in those schools, you know, extremely smart. So, but, you know, it's absolutely ridiculous. And remember those black teachers?
Yes, Atlanta.
Yes, mm-hmm. in Atlanta, who went to jail,
mm-hmm.
to jail, for trying to improve the scores of their students, okay, to jail. All right. And, you know, here we go. Here we go. And of course, you know, the parents who changed the zip code, that was all actually also all over social media, changing the zip code so their kid can go to right. a better school. They just want something better
mm-hmm.
for the kids. OK. And then look what happens. Jail. You know, So we'll see. You know, we'll see what happens there. So what were your thoughts on that whole...
Yeah, actually, I want to lead into that just by actually quoting Sunny Hostin, the attorney. She said that it mentions that how she's sickened by a college admissions cheating scam, but she says that you must be mediocre if you have to game that system. Mm-hmm. And where I disagree with her at is that she mentioned also about the legacy, you know, the library ring, and she was like, you know, if my child gets the benefit by going to the library, but I disagree on that. Mm-hmm. To, you know, to your point of what you were mentioning, you know, wrong is wrong. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think about, you know, you have your HBCU take, and I have my, you know, U.S. self-take, which is of more diversity, predominantly white folks. Mm-hmm. So I think about the fact that, you know, I'm a Bright Future scholarship recipient. You know, come check me, boo. Mm-hmm. You know, so my, mm-hmm. you know, test score was sufficient. My GPA was sufficient, and I earned the right to be there. Mm-hmm. You know, my parents did not have the means to pay for my college tuition, so I had to make sure that my academic was on point mm-hmm. in order to be there. Mm-hmm. And just think about all these different students. Just like, you know, the rhetoric that's in media when this one particular young lady received over, I don't know how many scholarships, at least over 10 or 20.
Yeah, I remember
and
that.
Yeah, and the rhetoric was, she's greedy. You know, she's taking away the opportunity from other kids. What? You know, and I think about this situation and what these kids are doing. No, this is true in fact that you're taking away the opportunity from some more well-deserving kids.
Right. I mean, you know, it was very interesting. And this knucklehead, Karen Morgan or whoever, I got to find her name. But anyway, who made this stupid comment about reparations, also Kate Morgan. She also... Mm-hmm. was one of the individuals chastising the girl who had gotten, you know, all the scholarships or whatever. But there's such resentment. You know, there's a guy I follow on Twitter, Left sent this. He's a good friend of Kaepernick's, actually. And I forgot what his real name is. But anyway, he's a professor. But his pinned tweet is something like, and I found this to be true, but basically, like, when you're an intelligent black person... Mm. You know, then you're a threat to people. And, you know, when a group of people have staked their identity, if your self-esteem and your self-worth is predicated or founded upon you being superior to me, when that's not the case, then, you know, it causes resentment and envy and cognitive dissonance. Like, how can this be? You know, and then there's the undermining your authority, questioning your credentials. There are professors talking about they're PhDs or whatever. They'll have, you know, students haven't even gotten their bachelor's. Well, where'd you go to school? You know, et cetera, et cetera. Question there isn't any profession you can go to where there isn't somebody who's black in charge who hasn't had to deal with this, you know, this notion. And, you know, for there to be such resentment at the scholarships, for example, you know, they're being greedy, whatever. No, that's not what it's about. It's about you're upset that somebody black is excelling, you know, and superseded what you have done.
Mm,
that's what it is.
That part.
That's what it is.
Can you say that one more time?
It's not that you are not upset about the fact that the person got, you know, a whole bunch of scholarships just to get them. You resent the fact that person was excellent and excelled what you have achieved, okay? And this is still, I mean, it's really funny, you know, to observe, all right? And you know, you see it kind of happening or whatever. People are like, oh, you know, yes, you know, and I'll be honest, you know, I used to like, when I sensed that I was dealing with opposing counsel that had these kinds of sentiments, you know, I would take great pleasure in destroying that individual, okay? I got my work to do, okay? But you're up here maligning, what, for no reason?
Mm-hmm.
You know, no. It's about making sure I do what I'm supposed to do, but I feel good about the fact that, you know, hey, you know, you're upset about it because you don't need to be. So, yeah, the College Board case of she had, I guess, a 400-point increase in her SATs.
Very high score.
Yeah, yeah. And so then, you know, she hired a lawyer to release her scores. It's another example. Well, right. She couldn't possibly have done that. Why couldn't she possibly have done that? If there are so many examples of, you know, people who are the valedictorians, like, well, no, we can't have you be the valedictorian. We need to have the salutatorian. We need to do it a joint. That happens all the time. if a black person is going to be the one in charge, because then the other ones, again, it's like, oh, you know, or be the top person. Oh, well, you know, oh, they just got there because of affirmative action.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, they just got there because they're black. Oh, you're black. You're going to get into this school or that. No, no, no. I'm going to work hard. And there are a lot of great posts about that, about people saying, oh, well, you're going to get this or that, or they're going to hire you, you know, because you're black, and, oh, you check this box, and you're black, and you're a woman, and, you know. Well, what about the fact that I work my tail off?
Mm-hmm.
How about that? How about my grades? You know, how about my scores?
Mm-hmm.
You know, how about that?
And how about if I simply check that box, then I will be discarded
mm-hmm.
before you even meet me?
Exactly. Exactly. So, but again, it's that resentment, you know. Well, you know, so let's very briefly get into a couple of different policies that have existed over the centuries that have been affirmative action for whites. Two great pieces. There's a great PBS.org article about this where I got a lot of this information, as well as a great book, I've mentioned it before, called When Affirmative Action Was White by Ira Katznelson. I mentioned it earlier, but I've mentioned it on other shows. When Affirmative Action Was White by Ira Katznelson. So let's start with the 17th century, when European indentured servants were replaced by slaves and won new rights, entitlements, and opportunities. In 1790, the Naturalization Act permitted white persons to become, that was the quote, naturalized citizens, thus paving the way for European immigrants, but not others. And we see that kind of sentiment still. You know, and how easy it is for a lot of Europeans, or certain policies that we even still have today, that makes it easier for whites to immigrate than for people who are not white. And only these people could serve on juries, could vote, could hold public office. And racial barriers to naturalized citizenship did not end, at least not officially, until the McCarran-Walter Act in 1952 and for white racial preferences in 1965. 1830, the Indian Removal Act forcibly relocated Cherokee, Creeks, etc., to make room for white, you know, they call them settlers, but I call them invaders and occupiers. 1862, this was a big one, the Homestead Act. And remember when Martin was talking about we coming to get our check?
Yes.
Right? Okay, and he was listing all the things. Well, this is what he was talking about. 1862, Homestead Act, giving away millions and millions of acres of free land, 270 million acres of free land, about 10% of the total land mass of the United States, given away almost exclusively to white people, okay? And, you know, I think about that. Whenever I see an advertisement or whatever, and they're like, you know, we've been in business since 1910 or mm-hmm. 18, whatever.
Right.
And I think about, you know, the fact that my ancestors wouldn't have had an opportunity to, you know, have a business this long. Yeah, I always think about that when I hear those things.
Hmm.
But the people who've been in, you know, business for that long. Because look at these kinds of advantages. And then really quickly, 40 Acres and a Mule, right? So there's another great book. J.A. Rogers has a lot of really good books. One of them is 100 Amazing Facts About the Negro with Complete Proof, and From Superman to Man. Okay, those are two great books by J.A. Rogers. But, you know, we talk about the 40 Acres and a Mule, and a lot of people know about General William T. Sherman and Special Field Order Number 15. But in that order, he didn't actually say anything about the mule. The mule came later.
Mm.
Okay, it was the 40 acres. And it was actually the result of a discussion between Sherman and the Secretary of what was War, and now Secretary of Defense now, Edwin M. Stanton, that was held 4 days before he issued the order. And there was a meeting they had with 20 black leaders, okay, and in Savannah, Georgia, where Sherman was headquartered following his, you know, infamous, or, you know, march to the sea. So that's where that idea even came from, to give them 40 acres. And look at where this land is. It looks like we're going to be running out of time. But islands from Charleston south, the abandoned rice fields, along the rivers for 30 miles back from the sea, and the country bordering St. John's River, Florida, are reserved and set apart for settlement of the Negroes, now made free by the acts of war and the proclamation of the President of the United States. And no white people were allowed there. No white person whatever, unless a military officer and soldiers detailed for duty, will be permitted to reside there. The sole and exclusive management of affairs will be left to the free people themselves. So, and then it talked about them getting 40 acres. So, but then, you know, Andrew Johnson got rid of that. So that was the end of that. And then, of course, after Reconstruction, you had Jim Crow. But let me tell you what the federal government did do. Paid up to $300 per slave to who?
The slave owners.
Slave owners.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's who got some money. Okay, for loss of their property. Mm. Okay, absolutely ludicrous and absolutely ridiculous. So there's a lot more to go over, but we are running out of time. We have a great show lined up for you next week. We're going to have Shane Springs on. He is an attorney. He is an intelligence lawyer, and they focus on surveillance. Okay, and there's an unclassified version of his talk that he can give to us. But, you know, we'll get into, you know, when the government can surveil us and listen to us and spy on us.
Yeah.
And that sort of thing. So, you know, getting some inside information on COINTELPRO. I used to work with Shane. He used to be back in the back doing that secret squirrel stuff. But I thought it'd be great for us, especially, again, given our history with COINTELPRO, you know, to talk to someone who has knowledge about what the government can do. So please tune in. Thank you very much. WMNF Tampa, WMNF 88.5 with Kai Wright in the Fourth Estate. Have a great day.